and welcome everybody to a brand new episode of 1000 Years of Beer. Hello from my side, Matthias, international brand ambassador and brewer from the Weinstephan Brewery. And to my side, as always, our Anton. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Welcome everybody. Our Anton is probably the best description you can do because you forgot my title again.
I knew it. But I wasn't sure. Is it social media was online marketing manager?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I was afraid to say it false again.
Never ending
and
story.
Did you then get pissed off me again? So that was it. Our Anton, you're our Anton.
All right,
I guess it's actually a compliment because you're the Anton.
I can live with that.
So
I can live with that.
Okay.
Welcome everybody. We have a very special topic today. Actually, with a guest you might know from our first season of 1000 Years of Beer, and we're diving deep into the topic of sensory again with Florian Lehnhardt. Welcome, Florian.
Thanks for having me again,
Matthias. And as I know, you always have something prepared to introduce our guests.
Yes, of course. Florian is PhD student from the Institute for Brewing and Beverage Technology here from Technical University Munich School of Life Sciences, Weinstephan. He is the head of the Laboratory for Sensorial Analysis of Beer. And he is actually a food chemistrist, not a brewer, but a food chemistrist. And you are working on your PhD on aging components of button fermented lager beers, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Got it right.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, when it's something scientific, Anton, then I don't forget.
Yeah, I know.
When it's something like online marketing, whatever, then I forgot.
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit sad now, but at least I got a beer. So there you go. Let's
you
dive
got
right
a
in.
Beer, actually, and that's our topic today.
Exactly. Let's dive right in. Because we talk about sensory of wheat beer, of top fermented beers today. And wheat beer, as many of you know, is liquid Bavaria. It's one of the most, or maybe the most defining beer of Bavaria. And Florian, maybe can you just describe briefly in your own words how you would define a wheat beer or a top fermented beer?
So a top fermented wheat beer for me would be wheat beer from wheat malt, of course, and in combination with top fermenting yeast. And these two differences from button fermented beers, let's say, they provide a different aroma, really special. I think we will talk about it later in deep. They provide a different taste. Usually the wheat beers are on the sweet side, not bitter side. And of course, one thing is the mouthfeel of beer, of wheat beers. It's creamy, it has more CO2, therefore it's more sparkly. And all in all, it's a totally different sensory experience in comparison to bottom fermented beers.
Yeah, compared to bottom fermented lager beers, you have a much wider aroma spectrum, right? And also aroma intensity.
Exactly. You have a good rule of the thumb is you have basically double the aroma amount, let's say. So the total amount in milligram per liter is almost double. And you have a greater variety of different compounds.
Yeah, that's what I also want to ask. There are some chemical aroma positive compounds inside a Bavarian style wheat beer that are not to find in a lager beer, right?
Yes.
Is it cause of the yeast or that would be now too fast a little bit. Okay, first, one of the biggest differences between lager beers in its sensory aspect and Bavarian style wheat beers is, like you already said, the mouth feel of it, so the creaminess and the CO2, the carbonation. So it's much more carbonated and also has with the yeast or the turbidity, the haziness, a much different mouthfeel than a classic filtered lager beer. Mm-hmm. But it's not only the yeast that is responsible for that mouthfeel, right?
No, it's also the protein content you get from the wheat malt is higher. therefore you have this enhanced mouthfeel, let's say. You have a smooth, creamy, sometimes thick mouthfeel, and that's a key attribute of the wheat beer, which is absolutely wanted, desirable, and therefore accepted as hedonic.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and I guess that's also one of the most iconic and rememberable aspects of a wheat beer when it comes to the customer. And I guess the other one is the compounds you already talked about, and I dig too deep before, is about those compounds that are maybe not so much to find, or actually not can be found in a lager beer. And those compounds also define a little bit what category or type of wheat beer we're talking about. Professor Backe, former professor for brewing science here in Weihenstephan, defined four categories of wheat beers or wheat beer taste. And two of those categories has something to do with that compounds. It's the the esters that are responsible for the banana, and the phenolic compounds that are responsible for this cloves aroma. But tell us about those four kind of wheat beer categories.
So as you said, basically you have these four categories. The first one would be the estuary category, which is basically fruity. So in food in general, you have two type of esters. That's a chemical substance class, let's say. And you have ethyl esters, which are driven from ethanol. And then you have acetate esters, which are driven by acetate, so acetic acid. And these are, in general, fruity, as I said. And one thing, or the most dominant in wheat beers, is the isoamyl acetate, which has a quite specific banana and isolated banana aroma, let's say. And the isoamyl acetate is not the only ester, of course, in your beer. You also can have ethyl acetate, which is more like solvent-like, like glue. That's a really interesting or important compound as well, because it supports this base aroma of esters. But if it's too high, it might end up as an off flavor, and you have a wheat beer that smells like glue. Therefore, it's recognized as undesirable, let's say.
So it's a thin line for a brewer to go that, okay, I want to have a very fruity ester-like wheat beer, but when you like overpace it a little bit, you can come from banana to the glue.
Exactly. Okay.
How do you control that as a brewer? Just so it doesn't...
So basically... that's a stress reaction of the yeast, and you can control it by lower temperatures, let's say, and of course your fermentation vessels and also yeast and yeast viability. That's the key, I guess, there.
So how healthy your yeast is, and which tank geometry you're using, and that you're not getting too warm in your fermentation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's get to the fruity ones.
Yeah, the second are the which is like this cloves-like aroma.
Exactly. So the second part is, or the second category is, clove-like phenolic aroma. The name comes also from the chemical substance class, which is phenols, and the key aroma compound here would be 4-WG. Which stands for 4-vinyl guaiacyl.
So thank you so much.
Maybe you want to give it a try as well.
Thank you so much for saying this now first, because that's why the other ones are laughing now right now, dear listeners, because when we recorded the German episode of this, I was struggling with saying even in German 4-vinyl guaiacyl.
Very good.
And now I can do it half properly. But that's why they're, yeah, that's why I'm now the dumb ass here in the episode, because I can't properly spell those chemical compounds. And that's why brewers and me love to shortcut things. And that's why we said, instead of 4-vinylguaiacol, we said 4-VG. And that's perfect.
And that's enough.
Yeah.
And we leave it at that. So.
okay. So. And those 4-VG has this cloves-like aroma. And exactly, there are also some technical. And this is the second type of wheat beer classes we have. And there are also some technological aspects where you can focus this on? Or what is this based on?
So first off, 4-VG is not the only phenolic compound in your wheat beer, but it's the most dominant and the most important. And we use it as an indicator for phenolic aroma in beer. Basically, it's the precursor of 4-VG is ferulic acid, which stems from barley malt. And of course, depending on your goal, you would adjust your recipe and you would use the least amount of wheat malt that's possible, so 50%.
And when it comes to Bavarian style wheat beers, because the law in Bavaria that the Bavarian style wheat beer have an amount at least of 50% wheat malt, and this ferulic acid comes from barley malt exclusively, right?
Not exclusively, so wheat also has a certain amount, let's say, but barley malt is the key there. It's quite low, yeah. So another part how you can control the phenolic aroma is, of course, your mashing. So you would use a 45 degree rest to enhance the degradation of the ferulic acid there. And also, of course, the fermentation vessels. Mm-hmm.
So next to the raw material aspect, you also have technological parameters you can adjust to focus on this phenolic aroma of 4-VG.
Exactly.
So then we are now 2 out of 4. And what the other key types?
So the other key types are less pronounced and less important, I would say. But there is the neutral or malty type, it's also sometimes called. Basically, they all have the same aroma compounds, but less intense. And therefore, you can't say, oh, that's extremely clove-like or extremely banana-like, but it's just a quite neutral aroma, let's say. And the last category is the yeasty aroma. It's probably the most complex one because all the aroma compounds which are responsible for the yeasty aroma are quite diverse and not investigated fully, let's say. There are some sulfur compounds, some organic acids there, and basically you can distinguish the yeasty aroma into a fresh yeasty aroma, which would be desirable, and on the other hand, old yeasty aroma, which would be more driven by autolysis, which is the exploding of the yeast cells and therefore setting free of undesirable compounds.
But those, especially the yeasty class of wheat beers, are aroma types, or this aroma type is very rare, right?
Quite rare, yeah.
So the most known are the more banana or more cloves-like wheat beers, and there are also a few neutral ones, but like the yeasty. I actually cannot remember having one in my whole beer drinker career.
Yeah, true. For me, it's the same. So basically, in Bavaria or across the world, you find this more estuary or more phenolic beers, and the yeasty ones are quite rare, let's say.
So for everyone who wants to try these or wants to do a tasting at home, is it possible to just get to the spice cupboard and just take out some cloves and just cross taste it, just to smell the cloves and smell the beer? Do you actually, just have the same taste in there? or the same smell in there?
Yeah, that's how I would always, as a sensory scientist, I would always try to give you the specific flavors. So you could have a banana for the banana aroma, of course, but there you have to be careful because banana aroma itself is already a mixture of isomyl acetate and also eugenol, which is a very similar compound to 4-VG. Therefore, it's a bit complex, but if you isolate the phenolic aroma from cloth, of course you will, I guess, see a difference.
But to get it together, so all wheat beer stuff does have like those banana and cloth aroma, but it depends on in which side the intensity is turning, so that you categorize it more as a kind of ester-like beer or phenolic-like wheat beer, right?
Exactly.
And how would you categorize the Weinstephaner wheat beer?
For me, the Weinstephaner wheat beer is a quite balanced product, which is more on the estery side.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting, because I also see it that way. But I would say when I talk to customers or fans, 7 out of 10 would say we are more on the banana side, but also there would be 3 out of 10 who would say, well, I see it more on the phenolic. I guess also it's part of how sensitive are you on specific flavors as a human, right?
Exactly, and that's the problem about having a banana train the impact of isomyl acetate, because it's not only isomyl acetate, and therefore depends on how sensitive you are, you would recognize more, or if you eat a banana, you are more perceiving the isomyl acetate than the other compounds.
Mm-hmm. So it's always very complex, and depends always on the consumer or on the tester, right?
Exactly. It depends on your sensory memory, let's say so, mm-hmm. And in combination with your physiology, of course, you are more on the other side.
On the one or the other side, yeah. Exactly. On that, I would recommend also for all of you who listens to that, maybe go to season 1 and listen to our first podcast with Florian when it comes to sensory analysis of beer in a very general topic that we talked about this, how, you know, the individual person can, you know, be prepared, but also can be seen as a test instrument. And that what you right now try to explain, you we also have there a much deeper talk on that. So maybe for all of you who are interested in this, go to season 1 of 1,000 Years of Beer. There we have the episode with you where we're talking about sensory analysis in general.